Welcome. This is the podcast of Care Austria with Andrea Bastorf-Hager.
I would like to welcome our guest today, Byron Haynes. Welcome, Byron, to the Care Office.
Thank you very much.
Glad that you are here. Byron is a well-known banking professional with over 25 years' experience working in the industry predominantly across Europe. He is the former CEO of Babak PSK and now the chairman of the General Supervisory Board of Novo Banco, a bank based in Portugal. Byron is in a unique position to bring his perspectives on the impact of COVID-19 and other key challenges and priorities on the global economy, the banking industry, and global organizations like CARE. Because Byron is a friend and supporter of CARE Austria for a number of years, and we are very happy that he supports our humanitarian work.
Well, as I say, Andrea, thank you very much for the invitation, and thank you for our ability to discuss these very topical, important topics of today and today's society.
Good. So let's get started. We had quite some conversations before we decided to do this podcast together, because we are both working in quite different spheres. I'm the CEO of a large NGO here in Austria. You are a very well-known banker, and this does not fit together naturally. Or what would you say?
No, I think the perception out there will be one of diametric partners. But hopefully through this podcast and in discussion of these important topics, I firmly believe that a NGO like CARE and CARE Österreich and business and banks are actually natural partners in today's world in solving some of the global pandemic or climate change crises that we have on our doorstep as of today.
Both of us had to deal with really serious challenges in the last 2 years, let's say, you in your position, I in mine. And in addition to that, we had to deal with it also in our private field. So the global pandemic was very disruptive for the work of CARE. On the one hand, the demand increased dramatically. On the other hand, we had to switch in many cases to remote management because traveling simply is not back even yet after 18 months of pandemic. How was the impact in your field of work, Byron?
Clearly, it's been dramatic. I've heard many commentators say that this is the end of globalization. From my point of view, it's far from it. But if I take the COVID pandemic first, I mean, this is truly a global pandemic. Our ability to manage and find solutions of this pandemic can only be done through global means. At the end of the day, we live, we work, we exist in one world, and we have limited resources, and those resources are getting eroded at an accelerating pace, and clearly we have to deal with that. In terms of direct impact on the financial world, the banking world, etc. There's been a dramatic impact on the business and operating models. And I like to give, obviously, a number of examples around both. First of all, if you look at the business model, and this is not just an impact on a business, but it's actually an impact on the global economies, be it in China, in US, and in Europe. And what I'm here and talking about, of course, is the global supply chains and the breakdown of global supply chains. It's actually been dramatic how this has been a conscious topic in the press, in the media, in day-to-day discussion. Particularly if you take what's taken place over the last 3 or 4 months around the breakdown of global supply chains. I think it's important to try to summarize what we're talking about here, because there's been a lot of rhetoric in the press. You know, the causes of the global supply chain breakdown are actually manifold. First, there is the increased demand that's taken place due to COVID is not over, don't get me wrong, but due to countries coming out of lockdown, etc. So you've got this big imbalance between demand and supply. Then you've got compounded by things like the power situation, the energy situation, the rising gas prices. In preparing for this podcast, the natural gas prices in Europe alone have gone up 350% since the beginning of this year. It is important to understand that the global supply chains are not just a phenomenon in the US, not just a phenomenon in Europe, they're a phenomenon in China and elsewhere. The rising energy costs that I've talked about, the shortage in port congestion, I'll actually come back to that, and the shortage of labor, they're all interconnected. And this has broken down the global supply chain. And this is actually the biggest vulnerability that businesses, governments, society, organizations, dare I say, around care, that has to deal with the breakdown of the global supply chain and how the impact of global crises like the pandemic, as well as climate change, is going to impact that going now and going forward.
Mm-hmm. As you described now, the impact of this global pandemic, very colorful for the so-called industrialized world. You can imagine and you know that care and our work, we are focusing on the most vulnerable parts of any civil society worldwide. Yeah. And we saw many of these impacts much earlier and in a much more tangible way, because many countries during the pandemic did like we did in Europe. They tried to proclaim lockdowns, and then people who are not working in the public sector or they work in shadow economy, they had to stop working. Yeah. So their income dropped long before we saw the phenomena that you described.
Yeah.
What we saw in many, many countries where care is working, that the cost for the way of life increased dramatically for daily things like bread, food, whatever, and hunger is back again. So before we felt the impact of COVID-19, millions of people around the globe already had started to struggle, and they are still struggling, because what you mentioned, one of the Viennese politicians yesterday evening said, the pandemic is not over yet, but next year we can expect it to be over. So here we have access to vaccination. We have more vaccine than we need and that people want, which is really an interesting phenomena. If we look at the countries that care is working in, we have a completely different picture, that there is not enough vaccine available, and also some skepticism is around there because people hear a lot of things and they are not part of well-informed information campaigns. And this is one of the roles that care is taking to enable access to safe vaccination. So what we saw in Europe, and if we would have had this conversation 1 year ago, the picture would have been much more dramatic. But what we saw in Europe, that of course, when the vaccine came out, we said us first. And now when we say the pandemic might be over, does that include the global perspective and view?
Look, I personally don't believe the pandemic will be over. But I think we will learn to live with it as a society, as a global population, etc. The big caveat I have, and I do finally see progress on that, is on the one hand, the pandemic has, and the global response to that pandemic, which has been reactive, has actually shown in a good light how the globe can respond to a crisis. What I mean by that is a good light in developing the vaccination. It was developed in record time. Of course, it was only developed because nations are reactive, and they're only reactive when it impacts their individual population, their individual society, their individual citizens. So that is the good aspect of the pandemic, and also finding solutions in protective medicine in terms of, you know, COVID protection going forward, etc. What has clearly been, and the United Nations Secretary General in September last month announced an F for failure in ethics of world leaders, is around the distribution of vaccinations and commitment of vaccination programs to the less, to the more vulnerable societies around the world. We're still missing 5 to 6 billion doses across the world. There are donations now coming into place. I think if you add up the US, Europe, China, elsewhere, it totals maybe a meager 1.6 billion. But again, I link that a little bit to the global supply chain, because at the moment, we're now getting some hard numbers in terms of donations, in terms of vaccination program. But some of those donations can only be produced in 22 or 23. Mm-hmm. So because of global supply chain issues, and we can certainly touch on that in terms of, you know, constraints around medical production and medical ingredients. So there I see the contrast around the pandemic and the response being good in developing vaccinations. And we know the reasons why, because they want to protect their own society first. I see the very slow response by world leaders to distribute excess vaccinations to the world. And to answer your question, does that mean the pandemic is going to be over? The answer is no, because we live in a global world and a global secure environment. I don't want to keep on using global supply chain, but that's a good example of the fact that if we don't fix and learn to live with COVID pandemic and find solutions of the COVID pandemic for the world, at the end of the day, it will be impacting Europe as it impacts the more vulnerable countries in society, like in Africa and elsewhere.
CARE has stated the quote that no one will be safe until everybody will be safe.
Yes, look, you know, I'm not one for high-level quotes, etc. I've always prided myself in action speak louder than words in my business life.
Yeah.
But what I can see is that those actions, albeit at the 11th plus hour, are finally being delivered by the global economies, because at the end of the day, it's going to all come from the global economies. And here I'm talking about US, China, Europe, and others. And they will be the ones that actually dictate success in the pandemic and managing the pandemic going forward.
Would you say, from your point of view, that the pandemic made the world even more unequal, or did it show patterns that have been there for decades anyhow?
I think the pandemic highlighted the vulnerabilities and the risks associated to be part of a global world. Meaning that the pandemic highlighted risks that already existed in the past around global supply chains. Mm-hmm. So countries, continents, trying to act in isolation is not possible. I've heard talk about in Europe, we need to do everything in Europe, etc. It's impossible. Europe is, globalization has brought products and services that are affordable and attracted to Europe and are key drivers of the economy of Europe. And it's the same in the US and same in China, etc. So I think what COVID has done is actually highlighted that it is important in helping the vulnerable societies of the world. It is important to have the goal of sustainable development, etc. Because at the end of the day, we live in this one world, and I'm not a humanitarian socialist. Don't get me wrong, I'm a businessman, but you know, even from a hard-nosed business community, we understand that in order for, you know, what COVID has done is highlighted the importance of global supply chains, that it has on the impact of the global economy, has an impact on the European economy, and, you know, has the impact on building sustainable development for society at large.
So if I get you right, I hear a certain slight criticism also on the European leaders, because you said not any country can act and work in isolation, and the country we both live in also sometimes like to state that Austria is doing this and that, and even the provinces of Austria are not aligned around one COVID concept. Isn't that interesting? The more global we get, the more impossible it becomes to act as a country, the more the countries try to do it, and we see it all over Europe. And is this only political quick wins, political quick wins, or is it really the belief that we can do something, we can change something here in Austria?
Look, it's not for me to criticize Austria in specific, but I'm happy to criticize the European Union, as I'll be happy to criticize you know, other major global powers. The reality is that, in my view, if I can say it like this, the positive impact of global crises like COVID, like the pandemic, or like the climate change part of the sustainable development, has been the fact that the global economies and the powers that be cannot fail not to react. Meaning that these crises have been truly global in nature. Mm-hmm. These crises have been dealt at the 11th plus hour. I do believe that we're not good as a society at large to focus on prevention and cause, but we are good as a society at large to react to crises when it is at the 11th plus hour. Mm-hmm. So, as an example, we talk about the sustainable development goals. I'm embarrassed to say that I, like many organizations and many people, could not actually highlight all 17 sustainable development goals. Of course, I can give it a good shot, and I'm sure I get half of it right and all the rest of it. But what was even more surprising for me when I was preparing for this podcast was that sustainable development agenda goals have been out there for almost 10 years. It was first discussed in the United Nations in 2012 in Rio de Janeiro. It was, and I'm sure you're very familiar with
Go
all
on.
This.
Go on, Byron. Be welcome.
That, it was approved by world leaders in the Paris conference in September 15 and effective from the 1st of January 2016. So if you ask me the question, has the last 5 years, the European leaders and the leaders are not focused on this and haven't made the progress that they should have made? Absolutely. Yeah. And it's only really because of these crises that actually has focused the mind. Mm-hmm. And it's because of the huge challenge that the globe has on increased energy costs, and I'll come to that in specific, that has actually forced, in my view, the need to actions do speak louder than words. Mm-hmm. Let me, Andrea. Let me let me perhaps ask some questions to the CARE organization. Let's start first on perhaps a question that you asked me at the beginning around the impact that the pandemic has had on a CARE Österreich, being part of a global organization. How have you seen that impact, and what changes have you implemented?
Looking back now, I have to say that the impact was much bigger than I thought it was when it happened, actually. Yeah. Because first of all, the demand was skyrocketing. Yeah. We received nearly on a daily basis. We are working in more than 90 countries in a global confederation. And nearly on a daily basis, we were receiving emergency alerts of countries that they need funding to handle the COVID situation. This was the first thing. The second thing was that it was quite disruptive for the ongoing projects. You know, Byron, that we distinguish a little bit in spite of the fact that it comes together closer and closer about between emergency work and so-called development projects. We partner with the European Union and the Austrian government. We are proud to do that. And so we have to follow this distinguishment. But what we saw is that due to lockdowns, due to high infection numbers, and due to the fact that even 1 year ago, not many states or not many regions knew exactly what was going on, it was super disruptive. We had to stop. It's not about traveling, because traveling is a natural part of any global organization. And we have started long before the outbreak of COVID to critically watch our carbon footprint. We will talk about that a bit later. And to really do things face-to-face that are very necessary to be done face-to-face. And the rest, we already started before COVID to do via Zoom, Teams or whatever. But what we saw is that the remote management and the split of our teams really had an impact. Yeah? And we had to deal on the one side with ongoing projects, because the large donors like the EU and also the Austrian or other European governments, they did not say, okay, we shift the focus. They allowed us to use small portions of very large projects for COVID, and the rest has to be implemented like it is in the contract. Yeah. Yeah. So there were enormous challenges for us. And on the other hand, we saw that we needed a lot of additional funding to really respond to the need in the countries that we were working for and with. And one of my colleagues, she's based in Kenya, and she said exactly nearly 1 year ago, she said, if we are not able to respond to COVID, we are not part of the system afterwards, because we are quite a large organization. We are amongst the top five, and we cannot say, no, we follow the path, the strategic path that CARE has and all our obligations. We have to respond to COVID now. And due to that, we are very thankful and happy that we have supporters also like you, I have to confess, that helped us really generate more funding and quick funding for the COVID response. And alone CARE Austria and CARE as a whole response to COVID worldwide, but alone CARE Austria could invest more than 1.2 million euro into flexible COVID funding, focusing on India, Nepal, Bangladesh, and all the regions where it really is a burning issue.
And on the your own operating model, you know, that's around, you know, obviously raising funding and all the rest in response to, in this case, the pandemic crisis. But have you seen changes, or have you implemented changes in your own operating model?
Yeah, because it boosted digitalization. As I said before we had one video conferencing system in place, now we have four. Yeah, so it boosted it, and it forced everybody in this team and around the globe to really rethink also our ways of working. And I think the positive impact, but I wouldn't have needed COVID for that, is really the boosting of also rethinking the use of resources, allocations of investment. And what we saw is that also all our partners around the globe, they had enormous challenges, because first they needed to respond to COVID, and second, some of them had to come up with better equipment for digital working. Yeah. And nowadays, and this all has happened only within 1.5 year, and this shows, I think, the two of us how quick development can be boosted if people are really impacted, because nowadays we even switched some of the EU projects, parts of them, now are digitalized. I'm not saying that this is the optimum, but it's better than stopping them. Yeah. And what we should not allow, neither the economic sector nor the whole NGO global sector, is that vulnerable people are even more left behind than they were before. Yeah. And this gap, to bridge this gap, new partnerships like the one between the two of us can be helpful for. And I think we could inspire each other and become even more creative in the things that can be done together for the benefit of all the sectors. Because as you said, we are living in one world. Yeah. And I mean, it should be a livable world still.
Why I want to link into the opening statements where I see an NGO like CARE and the business community in Europe and elsewhere as natural partners. I think in today's world, there's something called ESG, environmental social governance, investment in environmental social issues under corporate governance, which is very much a link to the business community. Of course, there are overlaps between the sustainable development goals, etc., and we can go into the details of that. Actually, ESG has been in existence, I think, just before sustainable development. But again, that has not been a focus of intention. I've now blamed the world leaders, and now I can blame the business community that it hasn't been an area of focus up until recent times. Yeah. But it is now a focus now of the business community. And they need and want to demonstrate their contribution to society, to demonstrate their contributions to the environment. And it's actually quite difficult for them to find the right partner. But something like a CARE Österreich is an ideal partner. Why? Because the fact that, as you mentioned, you're accredited by the EU, of course, that encaptures a lot of additional checks, additional audits, and all the rest of it, as it should be. But you know, a corporate or a business community wants to ensure that they're making their contribution to, in this case, CARE Österreich or the CARE family globally, to people on the front line, to make sure that their investment or their donation is going to the most vulnerable people of society around the world, to make sure that whatever it is, 90 cents in the euro goes directly to the project on the ground, and that, you know, the fixed costs are kept to a minimum, which I know that you've, through your digital program and others, have really made it as efficient as possible, and you'll continue to look at that, etc. So that's what I mean by this natural partnership, because if you believe the amount of money is going to be raised in climate change or needs to be raised in climate change to keep it at 1.5% or to keep the net zero targets at 2050, 2060, depending which continent you're talking about, there will be a huge amount of investment spend from governments, from companies, from businesses that they want to make sure you're not going to get all of it, but you know, to make sure it goes to those reputable professional NGOs, which CARE Österreich is definitely one of them, accredited in this case by the EU, that allows you to operate on a global stage.
I think this is the moment in time where I would like to mention that anybody who donates to CARE Austria in this case, I can assure you that 90% of the donation go directly to the project assigned, and depending on the year, between 2 and 3% is administrative cost, and between 6 and 8% is what you call fundraising marketing cost. In a podcast, you can also have some personal notes, and I would say that the partnership is not so obvious between the economic sector and the NGO sector. It has a lot to do with the fact that many people are not able to start to talking to each other like we did years ago already, and people simply don't know each other enough, and this is why it's so difficult to find an entrance point. The other thing is that especially my sector is not interested, and we have to be keen on it, because what we have is our good name and reputation that we do the right things together with CEOs from large companies, and that we don't enable what we summarize under greenwashing. So good intended, but only good for the company and not so good for the NGO. So to define these roles, I think, has really needs a switch in attitude. We need to speak the same language, more or less. And I also am deeply convinced, and we, this is where this conversation follows up to, that we have two large crises that showed us the direct impact also here in Europe. The one is the global pandemic, we talked about it, and the other one is the climate, the impact of climate change. I wouldn't even call it climate crisis. It is a crisis, but I think it's not good if all of us stay in the crisis mode for the next 30 years. I'm not sure if this level of concern can be held.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a crisis for that period of time, because people then will just accept it rather than acting to resolve it.
And what I really see and notice is that, and it was tragic that we have this large flooding in Germany and the Czech Republic and other places. But of course, our civil society understands it's time to act now. Yeah. For the millions of people that CARE is working around the globe, this time has already started long ago, because they have to deal with the impact of climate change on a daily basis, in spite of the fact that they contribute much less than the industrialized world. So this is the second large issue of our time that we have to solve somehow and find solutions that we still can live in many regions of this planet, because in Europe we will go on living here. It might not be that comfortable that it was. But in the Sahel zone or in parts of Africa or South Asia, people really struggle for survival. Yeah. So what is our role then to really keep this fire burning?
Well, as I said earlier in the podcast, unfortunately, it is human nature that, or society nature, that we tend to be reactive. So we are now reactive on climate change, because it is at the 11th plus hour, it is a global crisis now. And, you know, unfortunately, societies are only reactive when it impacts you directly. So absolutely, I mean, you're better knowledge than I have, but I fully understand that, you know, climate change has been impacting the more vulnerable societies for years. But now, finally, we do see the global powers to stand up and be counted, to actually react. We've moved away from the rhetoric around targets. Yes, there's still, you know, people throw out targets of 2025, 2030, net zero by 2050, or China 2060. We're now getting to at least tangible actions, and I'll come back to that. Queen Elizabeth was overheard saying, I think yesterday, in preparation for the opening of the COP26 climate change conference on the 31st of October, world leaders should stop talking and act. I am British, but even for the Queen to have guard down at the age of, I'm not too sure how old she is now. She's 95, something like that. But in any case, even she recognizes that the world leaders need to shift from the rhetoric of the last few years to the positive actions, etc. And the simple fact is, if you take any statistic, 75% of the global emissions come from the G20. The fact that the Climate Transparency Report, which was published yesterday, indicated that global emissions are going to rise by 4% this year, 2021, from a decrease due to the global pandemic from last year of 2020. So we're far away
much smaller than we all expected.
Yes, yeah. We're far away from from meeting the or keeping the world temperature at the 1.5% and net zero. But, we do see governments now making financial commitments. This is not something that will disappear, which is the good news. If I take Europe as an example, to compare the contrast, on the one hand, the EU leaders, I think, are going to meet around about the 21st, 22nd of October to talk about the energy crisis and what's in the toolbox in terms of that. And it's not just the short-term measures they're going to be talking about, you know, price caps, reduced taxes and all the rest of it, which is a necessity for the day-to-day consumer. But it's also in discussions with the European Investment Bank, as an example, to see if they've got headroom in capital in investing in green energy and such. So you mentioned greenwashing. Maybe there was an element of that in the past, but because so many different aspects of society are focusing on it, not just companies, not just particular countries, but, you know, the society at large. It will never be a perfect world, but, you know, the answer to the energy crisis of today is going to be the investment into green energy of the future. But today, you have to make the commitments now to have an impact. On fossil fuel burning, on coal prices, on oil prices at $85, per barrel, and these type of things.
And that the G20 leaders are obliged,
yes,
to help,
yes,
those, yeah, who are not so well equipped.
Yeah, because again, these two crises have told ourselves that we are in a joined up world, and you know what happens in Africa. In the vulnerable societies of the world, and I'm not just saying Africa vulnerable societies, I'm just using it as an example, really has an impact on the global economies. It really has an impact on climate change. It really has an impact on ultimately the welfare of those G20 communities themselves.
So maybe that's a bit of a naive approach, but when I listen also to what we are saying and to what many leaders and CEOs and politicians are saying, we need not only altruism, this is what we less need, I would say. We need the profound understanding that we have to switch our way of living, our way of working, and then we enable the civil society, the global one, to come closer together.
Yeah.
If meaningful participation is possible, not only in rich countries, but also in those who are economically weaker.
Yeah. Look, don't get me wrong, there will still be the inequity between different countries, between different continents, etc. That will still exist. It's existed throughout society. But there has to be a realization to close some of these gaps, because I think this inequity has widened dramatically
in the last,
the last pick a time, 15, 20 years. There's always been inequity in society, in the world, etc. And, you know, unfortunately, that will always exist. I mean, you can't have a perfectly equitable society. But what is incumbent on us to that gap has been widening, mm-hmm. and is incumbent on us through these two global pandemic crises to narrow that gap and support and help the more vulnerable in society around the different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm. And this is exactly what the SDGs were made for, and they apply not only to the so-called global south, they apply also to our own countries and societies. This is something that our political leaders are very silent about, but this is the big step in the SDGs, that civil society around the globe, we saw also in Europe, we saw it in the last years before the pandemic already, that the gap is widening between poorer and richer people. To work on this necessary change of attitude is one of the biggest tasks of a global organization like CARE, and if we can work together with the willing and the interested ones that are working in a completely different sector, and if we find ways to bring our sectors together even closer in the future, I think it might be a good step into a new future that we all have to rethink, the INGO and also the economic sector, how we can work together better.
No, absolutely. I think, you know, there are already fundamental changes in operating models. You've already talked about how CARE globally, as well as CARE SRECH, have been impacted. I've talked about how that's impacted in the business way, etc. That the reality is that I think there is a good opportunity to bring different aspects closer together. I think that, as I said before, there is this pent-up need, requirement. And don't get me wrong, we should not blame governments and all the rest. Every individual company, NGO, mm-hmm. Needs to make its contribution.
Yeah.
Because what I'm not in the school of blaming somebody else. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what is Byron Haynes' targets in terms of contribution, etc., or a bank or a company, etc. But generally, I think there is this fantastic opportunity where this need to reduce the imbalance in world society, the inequity imbalance in world society that has been highlighted by a global pandemic or highlighted by the climate change crisis, and the need for industry, companies, etc., to demonstrate their contribution to society. I like to use the word their contribution to society as let's call it a theme, mm-hmm. Allows a CARE SRECH to demonstrate their ability to ensure that contribution is delivered to the most vulnerable parts of the world. We're not just talking about Africa, we're talking about Europe as well. And I know that CARE Asia, you know, CARE organization does tremendous amount in Europe and Asia and Africa. So I don't want to get this into some nationalistic boundaries because that's one of the problems.
CARE US is working in the US since the pandemic. And they are quite successful in that. So it's about really bridging the gaps.
It's about connecting the partnership.
Yes, connecting the partnerships.
Our goals, mostly for the first time for years or maybe ever, are actually being aligned. What is the contribution to society and making sure that the most vulnerable are benefiting from that, which in the end benefits all.
And we all have to contribute to it, NGOs, industries, like you said. And I think this was an excellent closing comment. So thank you. I really would like to end on it's time to act, and the time is now.
Yes.
And we should not only talk, but really walk the talk. Yeah. And everybody can contribute his or her share to a different future. Yeah. And I think it's a very interesting time that we are living in. And if you need a partner for change, then CARE should be your partner of choice, because change is part of our business model worldwide and change for the benefit of the most vulnerable people. So Byron, I really thank you that you took your time, that we had this conversation, and I'm looking forward to our next joint projects.
No, thank you very much. Not heated, but a very lively discussion, so I appreciate that. And, you know, clearly there's a lot of space and actions that need to be done. I agree with you that the key message is act now. I would say time is very short, so we need to act now. Thank you very much.
This was CARE in Action.